Welcome back to the seventh season of my podcast. I'm making a couple of changes for 2024, namely moving episodes to fortnightly to create a more realistic workload and publishing on Thursdays. You probably know by now that I work with companies to help them understand what's getting in the way of people having the best experience and performing well. Whether that's about work culture, leadership and management, mental well-being or engagement, I strip back the noise to uncover what's really going on. And then together we create a meaningful, innovative and sustainable approach to address those challenges. And that's what I'll be discussing with my guests. It's all about putting the human factor back into business. Because when we get people right, we get business right. I want to give a quick shout out about Leadership and Manager Labs, because I'm facilitating those with the fabulous Gemma Ellison of Heart Leadership. If you're interested in a space and community dedicated to development via a process of experimentation that gives us permission to analyse, test, review and learn, all within a human-centric framework, get in touch. Details in the show notes. I'm your host, Lisa, psychologist and psychotherapist and founder of It's Time for Change. Thank you for joining me on Beyond the Water Cooler. So today we're talking about sleep, and I am really pleased to be joined by Dr. Jill McGarry, who is a Sleep Better doctor. And Jill is a chartered clinical psychologist. She has over 25 years experience and she specializes in sleep. And I'm really curious to know a little bit more about how that came about, because from reading Jill's profile, it hasn't always all been about sleep. So welcome to the podcast, Jill.
Oh, thank you very much, Lisa. That's a great introduction. And an interesting question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where to start? So yeah, so being a clinical psychologist means you need to do a degree in psychology, get some work experience, and then do a doctorate. So clinical psychologists aren't taught in one therapy mode. They're taught a range of them, but we're also taught to assess problems so we can point people in the right direction. But actually, that training has not a single lecture on sleep, which didn't occur to me at the time. At the time, in my younger life, I slept fantastically well, not a problem for me. So it didn't need to even hit the agenda for me. But after I'd qualified, I started working with people with learning disabilities and autism. And what became apparent was people with Down syndrome have a larger tongue and a thicker neck, which actually makes it hard for them to breathe, especially at night. Because when you lie down, your tongue flops into your throat and blocks the airway. So you're constantly waking up. So sometimes people with Down syndrome need a kit called CPAP to help them breathe at night. And that's really hard work. Wearing a mask and having a machine next to you is not easy. So I did a lot of work with a sleep clinic in Manchester to improve that, making reasonable adjustments. And then people with autism have sleep problems, but for a whole host of other reasons. So I began to specialise. And then I had kids. And what about that, Lisa? Yeah,
I'm going to say the impact.
Who doesn't? But I am a geek, you know. I love facts. I love finding real actionable solutions. I do think that talking is magic. So when I was struggling with my kids sleeping, talking to other people did make a difference, but also hearing their solutions, how they solved it, was really great. And having a go or what other people were suggesting and trying to think through why that was useful. And then I had a heart condition that meant I had to. So as a young mom with a career as a consultant clinical psychologist, I was not prioritizing sleep. I would probably get 6 hours sleep at max. I'd put the kids to bed and then get on writing reports, helping out my staff, sending emails, and as well as doing the day job. And I was working full time with a husband that worked away during the week. So I was like a single parent. But my heart condition meant I had to be careful around drinking coffee, getting anxious or excited, and not getting enough sleep. Because if I had all of those three things happen, then my heart would go into double rate. And I had to get to have my heart restarted within 4 hours, otherwise I wouldn't survive. So I learned how to breathe to restart my heart. But I also learned that I love my coffee in the morning. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to stop that if I could help it. which is quite interesting, isn't it, for sleep?
Yeah.
So most people go, sleep and coffee, they shouldn't get together, but I can talk a little bit more about that if it's useful, Lisa. So I began to train myself to prioritize sleep and protect it, and to get the most from it. I've had my heart up now, so it's not such a big deal. But I lived with that problem for 15 years. And then I decided I wanted to do things differently. I decided not to work with people with learning disabilities and autism more anymore, but to specialise in sleep. So I've done a couple of great courses at Oxford Uni and one with Sleep Unlimited. And I take part in weekly seminars with the University of Arizona. So that I'm one of the best experts, I'd like to think, in this field. But there aren't many of us. We're a bit of a unicorn, Lisa.
Yeah, and I like a unicorn. But you know what you just described in terms of kind of having kids, being a busy parent, you know, even lots of people have their partners working away, but even if they're not working away, they're busy doing their thing. You've got a full-time job, you're trying to meet everyone else's needs, you're putting the kids to bed, you're working in the evenings, particularly now there are fewer boundaries around how we work. Mm-hmm. Actually, what you're describing is such a common experience for so many people. It is not surprising that people are struggling with sleep, either struggling to get to sleep or waking in the night and so on. And we can go a little bit more into that. But yeah, that's why this is so relevant. And that's why I wanted to have this conversation. And you were kind enough to join the Thames Valley Chamber of Commerce mental wellbeing steering group's webinar. I think it was last year.
Ooh,
when we talked about sleep, and I'll put the link for that into the show notes, where you gave lots of really, really good advice. So I wanted just to kind of bring that on a little bit more in terms of just having a conversation around really focusing on why this is something that companies, employers need to get their head around in terms of how is it impacting on us, because it will be, and what difference can we make rather than, oh, it's just a sleep problem. We all have sleep problems. Just get on with it. So
yeah, that's very British, isn't it?
It is. So let's actually start then. Tell us, like, why is sleep such a big deal? Like, why? Because it has become more talked about in recent years. Why is it such a big deal?
Well, we know now it's a big deal because we've got some really clever equipment that can sit on the head, a polysomnograph, and we can work out that actually when we're asleep, we're not just unconscious. It's not like having an anaesthetic or kicking ourselves off to sleep with some alcohol. When we have good sleep, our brain is doing one of about 6-7 things that are quite complicated, but could we, you know, simplify them to, it washes out the toxins in your body, it helps rebuild your muscles, it realigns your appetite, because of the connection with the gut. It helps you remember things better. So people that are studying, it helps you work through your emotions, and it helps your skin. So there are all sorts of things going on at night that we didn't know before. And we know more about how it happens as well. So when we realise that sleep is good, all these different things, when we go through several stages through the night, then actually we begin to think that we need to look after our sleep as much as we look after the things during the day. I mean, we're getting really good at looking after what we eat, what we drink, and making sure we're hydrated enough, making sure we move enough, making sure we do exercise, even making sure we breathe better is becoming a really important aspect. So sleep is one of those pieces of that jigsaw. If we can get that in there, the better.
But I also liked, what you were just saying about, imagine if we were, because the number of people I speak to who almost talk about sleep as a bit of a waste of time, like if I'm sleeping, I'm missing out. Whereas actually, if you're really communicating the positives of sleep, you know, some people are talking about they struggle with their memory, or they don't, you know, they struggle with their skin or their energy or whatever it is. And you can say, well, a really, really easy solution would be, you know, getting more sleep. And I hear people my age, my friends, beginning to talk about the fact that they actually value their sleep a whole lot more. But we need to kind of communicate that message, I guess, perhaps to those who haven't quite grasped that yet.
Yeah. And it is a message that I think, you know, talking about the British way of doing things,
we're
not great at it, are we? You know, we snooze, we lose, I sleep when I'm dead. You know, it is changing. And I love the fact that shops now have like sleepy tea in them, and we can buy lots of lavender products. it's a little bit skewed. You can't really solve a sleep problem with those things, but it is changing our mindset to understand the importance of it. But even top people like American presidents are no longer allowed to go into negotiations straight after jet lag, because I think it was George Bush made a terrible mistake because he was sleep deprived. He wasn't thinking about his relationships, wasn't communicating well, wasn't listening well, and it went disastrously wrong. So they have better sleep stations on their flights as well now for the presidents. You know, I can't remember what those planes called. They're called Air Force or something, whatever they are. But even, you know, the presidents have, you know, no matter who you are, no matter how clever you are or how influential, your sleep's still important, isn't it? Yeah. And your brain's still the same structure. It's not going to change.
Yeah. And in terms of, you know, we know the impact of poor sleep. You know, you've just given a brilliant example of George Bush in terms of just making bad decisions and communicating poorly and so on. And we just see that day in, day out in companies. Mm. Of course, the impact on people's stress levels and how they are able to perform or concentrate, or their relationships with their colleagues. You know, the cost to the economy is huge through sleep deprivation, isn't it?
Yeah, Lisa, you're spot on. It costs companies a fortune, not just in the lost hours from people being off sick, because if you're not looking after your sleep, then you're more likely to affect your immunity. But actually, from a real practical point of view, when you've not slept well, you're more likely to have accidents and make mistakes. So you will lose staff from those things as well. You know, now we have the National Anaesthetist Society saying that their anaesthetists have to have certain amounts of rest and not to work certain hours. And if they are, because of their stretched, they have to have somebody else check their numbers, because so many mistakes have happened. So many fatalities have happened. You know, we don't want people dying or losing limbs from machinery not being operated effectively because of it. We know that one of the reasons why Chernobyl happened was because all the staff on that night shift were sleep deprived. So it has huge implications. You know, that's why the health and safety exec actually has a fatigue element to the checks on companies, and everybody should have a fatigue policy, because it eats into the effectiveness of companies right from the top person. You know, like I was talking about presidents of companies as well as countries being impacted, down to the porters that are cleaning, you know, knocking equipment or affecting communication can have such a big impact.
Yeah, massive. So what are some of the short-term impacts that companies might see? And again, I'm curious about how we can help people get on board with the kind of sleep agenda. So there are still some people who think, well, that's outside of work. But actually, when they understand the impact on their staff, on their workforce, in terms of what's happening day to day. So what are some of those kind of short-term impacts?
So, yeah, it's a really good question. So when I run workshops, I start with asking people, what do you feel? You know, how does it impact you? And I think everybody, I know everybody has the odd day when they don't sleep well. So everybody knows their own personal answer to that. I think sometimes that's the problem, is some people are looking for the holy grail of always sleeping well. Mm. And that's such a rare thing. Mm. I think knowing that we fluctuate and that it does get impacted is really, really important. But people need to know their own personal impact. So some people, it will affect their memory more. I mean, one person nicely talked in the workshop about the fact that she often puts things that shouldn't be in the fridge. Because her brain is not working at its full capacity, and she can't find things all of a sudden. People talk about often them feeling more irritable and less able to hear. You know, friends and families and work colleagues might go, I told you that 10 minutes ago. You know, it just doesn't stay in your brain. And we know that to be the case, because our memory when we're asleep is a bit like a filing tray on your desk in the office, that you're putting lots of things in the filing tray, and it's only at night that you look at what's in that filing tray and go, do you know what, I'm gonna keep this and this, and you put it in the cabinet, and the other things you put in the bin. So that filing tray is empty for the next day. But if we don't get enough sleep, that filing tray will not be empty. It'll just be constantly topping up. So it can have a big effect on memory. People don't realize that because maybe in their childhood or later in life, they crammed and they could get stuff in, but they only got it in short term. But we also know that short term memory is affected as well. And then if you stop remembering things and you're not listening properly, then oh my God, it affects teams, doesn't it? It affects relationships with your loved ones, but it definitely affects teams. You know, often in a family, you're a close-knit group of people, but when you're at work, you've got 10 people that you might be immediately working with, plus another 30 in the next part of your world and more beyond that. And you have to not just think about the conversations you're having with them now, but some of the implications, plus some of the long-term stuff. So your capacity in work is so much more important around your memory and your ability to work emotionally. So the other thing we know about when you're asleep is we work through our emotions. So I don't know how many people will have heard of REM sleep. So that's when you have rapid eye movement. And that's when the rest of your body's still, but only your eyes are moving. And of course, your diaphragm is still breathing. But during that part of sleep, that's when you do your dreaming in the majority of the time. And during dreams, we solve our problems. Our brains are really clever. They use that moment because we're not using our limbs and our cortisol is not racing through us when we're thinking through those stressful situations. Our brains integrate all the other parts that it hasn't been able to do today to come up with some wacky solutions. So,
knowledge is really empowering because when I'm wearing my psychotherapy hat one day a week, and talking with people about sleep or their impact of feeling depressed or anxious and stress and so on their sleep and not spending enough time in REM sleep or deep sleep or whatever, we're talking about the consequences of that. And actually people don't understand, because we're not educated, are we? People don't understand what sleep is actually doing for us in terms of our brains are super, super busy when we're asleep. So it's not a waste of time. It's all the benefits that come from it, and not just benefits in terms of making us feel better, but the necessary stuff for us just to perform and function at what we consider to be just a normal level, let alone thriving and stuff.
Yeah. You're spot on. I would love it if we could do more work in school. So I've worked with a few schools, I've worked with parents sometimes in primary schools because they're the ones that can influence their children's sleep, and often then they talk about their own sleep. And I've done some work with secondary school kids because thinking about, and not just the children, but the staff then, because then it becomes more important to think about the clock, because as adolescents, they do stay up later. Mm-hmm. So knowing yourself is really, really important. You know, when you were talking before about what are the things that, you know, companies can do to make a difference, is knowing their staff well. So if somebody is a lark, and I think the whole of the UK loves living on a lark system, you know, everybody has to be in at work by 9 o'clock, they're the last workers. Majority might get in at 7 o'clock, but actually you're missing out on half of the community that are owls. You know, if you let them go into work at 10 o'clock, if you let our kids go into school at staggering times so there's less bullying and that each age group is more specifically identified and worked with, then how much more capacity would you have as a school or a work team? You know, I've just been working with a solicitor who is very much an owl, and the company absolutely love him because he's there till 7, 8 o'clock at night, answering all the emails, sorting out all the other stuff when everybody else has left. So their company are getting a benefit of having longer hours just because they've allowed him to have flexibility of not starting till 10, 11 o'clock to fit in with him. So, you know, there's huge benefits to flexible working. It's not just about flexible working for mums and dads with kids, but flexible working to fit our staff team.
I really like that example because, again, when people talk about sleep and who might have problems with sleep and how might that show up, often they'll be thinking about people who are working shifts, they'll be thinking about night workers and so on. And actually, when we can just take that back to a more general conversation, which is about every individual in our organisation has their own sleep patterns and they need sleep at different times. And if we can create the right experience at work where they are able to function at the time that's best for them in a way that's best for them, then you're going to get really great things. And it's the one theme that runs through, regardless of whether we're talking about mental health specifically or we're talking about sleep, whatever we're talking about. It's just about, like what you said, knowing your staff well so that you can, as much as possible, obviously the company, yeah, the workplace has requirements, but where you can flex to suit individual needs better, you get so much more from them and so much more for them.
Yeah. You know, and for that gentleman, he often talks about, actually, he knows some of the other staff that are in the office. Like I talked before about the porter and about other people that might be in the office that wouldn't normally be there. Mm. So he actually helps with the team cohesiveness. Oh. You know, you don't realise how much the people that you don't see can be influential within a team and help pull you all together. So, yeah, I think thinking out of the box is really, really important for companies, because we can be more flexible today, can't we?
Exactly.
It comes, hybrid working brings its own problems, but yeah, we have to think about where it can benefit the individuals and therefore the company.
So I want to just touch on night workers and shift workers. I don't want to spend too much time on that because that's obviously a specific group of people. But what would be your advice for them in terms of the implications for them around obviously their changing their sleep patterns? So what could we do to sort of better support them and understand their needs?
Gosh, Lisa, that's a really good question and something that other countries in Europe are really addressing. So in some of the Scandic countries, they actually allow night shift workers to retire 5, if not more, years before the rest of the population, because they know it has such a massive impact not to be living your life on an ordinary clock. The clock and the way of sleeping and waking that humans were made to do, you know, we're really clever people, but our brains and our bodies are still ancient. You know, we still need to do what we did when we were cavemen and cavewomen. And our bodies will be affected by not living on that, being awake when the sun is up and being asleep when the sun is down. And we just aren't there in the UK. So knowing that is really important. And what companies can do is to think about that equality and think about age equality, because as we get older, we find it harder to be flexible with our day and night sleeping. And therefore, for things to be equal and to have equality, we need to think that actually, as we get older, we need to ask the older members of our team, do you want to still do night working? Is it something that fits with you and who you are now? Are there things that we can make adjustments for? So I've just been working with a guy who works for Amazon. He has been doing night shift. He's an engineer for many years for them. But he is now struggling. It's because as we get older, we can't do those night shifts as easily as we used to. He's beginning to notice the impact. He has got some pain issues as well. And we've been talking to Amazon, their occupational health team. So now he's thinking about, he doesn't want to do days because his life has adjusted, but he's doing shorter nights so that he doesn't have such an impact. And actually his rotation is slightly different to everybody else's. And he's beginning to see the benefit of that, which is making him think, actually, I perhaps would be better off doing days. So it sometimes is little steps for people, getting occupational health on board, thinking about what a company can do. But I get what you say, Lisa, not every company can be as flexible. It has to fit in with what a company needs are. But when you've got some of the big companies, there's definitely more wiggle room. But a company knowing that that's needed. So I've done quite a lot of work in the NHS, and they often say, well, everybody has to do night shift working. It's equal and it's fair. But fair and equal isn't the same as equality. You know, everybody doing everything the same. So for a disabled person that needs a wheelchair, is it fair and equal they just sit at an ordinary desk? It's not appropriate. So it's the same for people and aging. It's really important. And then the other thing that companies can do when it comes to night shifts is to think about how long those night shifts are. You know, what's the time period they do it. But the most important thing is they think about always rotating clockwise. So if somebody's done an early shift, they need to move to an afternoon shift and then to a night shift. never backwards, never do, oh, you did night shift last, you can do afternoons next. It should always rotate clockwise. And that's so easy. You know, we've got AI doing so many things. AI does the shifts. All you need to do is put it into their algorithm that we want staff. You know, so it's not even a big ask. It might be a computer with a person that needs to put that in, but it's not a big thing.
That's a really good, simple strategy then, isn't it? And I think it highlights, you know, it goes back to what you're saying about knowing your employees well. And, you know, you know whether they're working shifts, you know whether they're working nights, but to know whether they are perhaps new parents, whether they do have health issues, whether they are at an age where they're experiencing menopause or whatever, all these different factors that can get in, that are known factors that can interfere with sleep, as well as just, I just generally got so much spinning around my head, I can't sleep, or whatever else might be going on. I just think, wouldn't it be great when people have those check-in conversations with their managers or doing it as a team, you know, small team conversations, just to talk about and just normalize the conversation around, actually, you know, how are you sleeping? What's getting in the way of it, or what helps? And being able to just share the kind of the sort of top tips that help me sleep well, or did you know about this particular, whatever it might be, strategy, sleep, tea or whatever. So I think just being able to have those conversations and normalize it, so it's not such a almost a taboo subject, would be really powerful.
Yeah, but it is really hard. I think we were talking before, Lisa, about the fact that, you know, we don't mind talking about the sleepy teas or the pillow sprays, but actually people don't know what really helps. They don't even know if those things work or not. Because if you're a good sleeper, you sleep well, and you don't know why it happens. It's just like magic, isn't it? It just happens. So you can't even advise somebody about why it works. And if you do struggle with sleep, like you said, there may be a myriad of reasons. So telling somebody else that this is what works for you doesn't mean it's going to work for them. And then that can be so disheartening, can't it? To try stuff and to not still sleep and then be exhausted, you know, it just adds into the fatigue and the feeling that it's helpless and hopeless. So I often talk about just getting the basics right. You know, when I do team days, when people say that, you know, I don't know what to say that will help people, I often say it's just the very basics is just like dental hygiene and hand hygiene. You know, if you had a dental problem, you wouldn't stop still brushing your teeth and flossing. You'd still do those things. And the same with hand hygiene. You have a tummy bug, you wouldn't stop washing your hands. But people don't know what sleep hygiene is, do they? You know, and it's made so confusing because people add in information about insomnia and sleep apnea and restless leg, all sorts of things get added in. You know, you need magnesium for restless leg, you need to think about the iron, but actually sleep hygiene's not got anything to do with any of those. So I often talk about sleep hygiene being four main basic things to try and simplify it. I think because I've come from the world of learning disabilities, I love making things simple.
Good.
So the four things are, first is light. So when we talk about sleep, it's not just what you do at night. So when I say the word light, you're probably all thinking, oh, you're going to talk about blue light, switching off your computers, switching off your Facebook, social media. But I'm also, and more importantly, talking about what you do during the day. So light is one of the most important things. And that's about getting enough light into your eyes, because we need that to set off a load of chemicals that are needed in our brain for our sleep that I would explain in more detail another time. And so it's as important that you get that 30 minutes of natural daylight. So we often talk about fresh air being good for you or green spaces, but science is now showing us that light is vital. And so, yeah, there is the other end of it, making sure it goes dark at night in your bedroom and before you go to bed, that the lights are being dimmed. Because like I said, we're still cavemen and cavewomen. That's what we did around the campfire. You know, we had nice orange lights from the fire, and then that went out and we just had the stars in the sky to light the way. So that's the first one, to get light right. And then the second one is to get heat right. So often people, again, think about, oh, yeah, you're talking about having a hot bath at night. And I'm not talking about having a hot bath at night, because actually what you're doing with a hot bath at night is you're heating up your body. And what we need to do is have a cold bedroom. cold at night, like we would have underneath the stars. It will be cold. We'd be sleeping underneath those furry sheep blankets or whatever we'd have had. And they, you know, but also we need to think about in the morning, we need to be warm. So people are doing the Wim Hof stuff and having cold showers. That's not the best time to have it. You know, in the morning, you want to be warm. So you might be getting out of bed, putting on your fluffy slippers, putting on a thick dressing gown, doing some of the things to get your heart moving, getting your body heating up, even open the curtains to let the light in, but also the heat from that light as well to get to your body. So that's the second one. And then the third one is making sure you eat the right nutrition. So I talked a little bit before about coffee and how coffee can be great if you have it first thing in the morning and you want a pick-me-up. In fact, it's the perfect natural substance for it. And we shouldn't poo-poo the use of coffee, especially with those that are owls and people that have a thing called sleep inertia find it really hard to start the day. Coffee is the best natural ingredient that we've got for that. It is a fantastic supplement, and it should be called a supplement when it comes to sleep, as long as you use it at the right time of the day. Not to use it at night.
No.
And then alcohol. You know, people use alcohol to go off to sleep. And again, that's not the right kind of sleep. I try to help people see that an alcoholic sleep is a bit like a sedated sleep, an anesthetic sleep. You're not going to be going through all those beautiful cycles that your brain needs. It helps you get off to sleep, but it doesn't help you stay asleep. You get up to go to the loo. You might feel a little bit queasy, as well as your brain not doing its things that it needs to do. And then the fourth one is routine. So, you know, if people can make sure they get up at the same time, like I said before, it's what you do in the morning and the daytime is as important as what you do at night. So if you can set the same time to get up every day, that'd help. So, yeah, so if somebody's chatting to somebody and they're saying, I'm really struggling, just say, oh, you're still doing sleep hygiene. Just and don't make it too much more complicated than that.
Yeah, and I think that's really good advice, because people might know sleep hygiene stuff, do it for a bit, and then it fizzles. So those good intentions, those good habits, and I think actually just keeping those four things on track would make such a difference for so many people.
And it's so important to prioritize it. You know, like you said, it falls off the agenda. But when you know that there are benefits from it, I think it's less likely to, because you begin to value it then, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
But sometimes we often need others to help us, you know, to protect it. So that idea about chatting in the office about it and helping each other out, once you know that those four basic parts to sleep hygiene are there, you can help each other protect it by just having those conversations. And then going home and having those same conversations and saying to your partner, you know, this is important to me. I have so many conversations weekly about partner effects. You know, some people like the bedroom hot, some people like it cold. How can we do that dance when two people are sleeping in the same bed? And in some households, the dogs, the cats, the kids.
Yeah.
You know, so getting it is a little dance for everybody that's slightly different, and making sure it works is really important.
I also think the benefit of having a partner or someone else in your household who knows your intention to try and prioritize sleep a bit more can be really powerful, because if you've got someone who's saying, right, you said you're going to be going to bed earlier tonight, you said you're going to be turning off your screens, or you said that you're going to try and do, you know, start doing, thinking about your sleep hygiene a bit earlier, and actually you've got someone prompting you and kind of almost holding to account in a very friendly, supportive way, that can be really, really helpful. And I know, you know, for me personally, I'm the person who, you know, I've got the kids in the morning, I'm sorting out the stuff around the house, and then I'm working, and then it's acting family stuff and trying to sort of squeeze a bit of exercise or something in there. And then I get to the evening, like, right, that's when I look at my phone and go, whoa, there are like 20, 30 WhatsApps or something. I've now set up on there like a screen lock on my phone that I've got for my kids. It never occurred to me to do it for me, which of course I can override, but it's a prompt to go, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be putting it down now. My husband will say, come on, you said this morning you want to have some earlier night, so stop doing whatever you're doing and prioritize that. And all those little things can make such a big difference. And I think, you know, that's something to get people in the workplace as well, thinking about how do you set up those routines for yourself outside of work. So it's not happening at work, but certainly we can have the conversations and share good practice.
Yeah, you're spot on, Lisa. That happens to a lot of people whereby, you know, they, what we call sleep procrastination, they kind of squidge out the sleep because they don't have enough time for everything else, so that that it's a last priority. But then when they realise they need to prioritise and it is having an impact, how do they sort of schedule everything to enable it to find some space within the day? And so doing some simple things, like you said, you know, your husband saying time to put your phone down. Mm-hmm. You know, some people actually set an alarm clock to give themselves, I'm going to do an hour on social media. The alarm goes off and they stop it. Some people, when we've talked it through and we're trying to find different solutions, is they stand up, they'll only look at their phone stood up and go through their WhatsApp, because you're more likely to go, oh, I want to sit down, you know. So there are lots of little tweaks, and finding something that works for you is really, really important. And one of the other things that lots of my clients actually say that has made a difference is actually plugging your phone in at the other side of the room, so that if you wake in the night, one, you don't look at it and start clock watching, because that makes your sleep worse.
Yeah.
But two, you don't reach for it to look at social media, because what we now know is that social media is fab at grabbing your attention, isn't it? Yeah. And how often do 2 hours, 3 hours pass when actually you only wanted 30 minutes? And to be able to have your phone at the other end of the room means you're less likely to do that. And we know that it's not just the blue light at night that is causing the problem. A huge amount of research is pointing to the fact that it's the social media and the addictiveness to it that is stopping it. So I don't know, just shrinking that, not stopping it, because being on social media is important. Yeah. Connecting with people for our general well-being is important, but making sure it's got an appropriate amount of time is really, really important. And so, then you have more time with your husband.
Yeah, exactly. It's a win-win. So what would you say to people who might be at work? So they might be managers, for example, who are aware that they need to, you know, they might be listening to this thinking, maybe I should start thinking a little bit more about the sleep aspect of my team. So firstly, what might they notice about what are the signs that someone might not be sleeping really well? And I ask that kind of thinking, should I be asking that? Because isn't it really obvious that people will just be yawning? So is that a daft question? Or are there other things that perhaps we should be looking out for? Or is it actually just about having a conversation and having regular check-ins to find out if people are tired or if they're sleeping well?
Do you know what? I think that people love talking about their sleep, don't they? You know, no matter where I am, and even if I don't tell people I'm a sleep expert, quite often in any conversation I'm in, it comes up. And then one of my friends will say, Jill's a sleep consultant, you know, and all of a sudden we're in a different realm, because people do love talking about it. And it is the best segue into talking about mental health, because people talk about sleep from its physical health point of view. Because of the impact it has on you just surviving a day. But actually, it gives you some ways in to also then talk about somebody's mental health and how they're coping in other ways. Because depression and anxiety and even dementia have all got implications for sleep. And sleep also impacts on all of those things as well. So that it is an important conversation that is easy. You know, if a manager's thinking, oh my God, I need to talk about this, but I don't know a way in, it can be such a nice little easy way to not drop it in the conversation, because we wouldn't want that. You'd want it in an appraisal, or you'd want it in a nice supervision point or a one-to-one meeting that would make it happen, that would be useful for that individual.
Okay.
Also, there's what you said earlier on about having a yawn, you know, is it obvious about having a yawn?
Yeah.
We have got this year International Yawn Day. I think it's on the 10th of November, first time ever. And because we know yawns are really, really important. So a yawn isn't a sign that somebody is tired. It might be a sign that somebody is is lots of other things. We don't know enough yet. So the other reason for having an international yawn day is to get more information. But we do think it's a bit like a sigh, that it actually is a release of energy or a sense of stress that somebody's coping with, or lack of oxygen in the air. So I wouldn't overinterpret a yawn. But if you saw somebody yawning in the meeting, it might not be that they're not slept well. We're not sure what it is. There's lots of information that we're beginning to collect together, lots more research. We think there might be something about oxygen levels. We also think about it's similar to a sigh, which is the human equivalent to a dog or an animal shaking off stress. It might be our way of working through that. So it's not an easy sign. It doesn't help. But the one that is an absolute giveaway that would be really important to stop and have a moment to talk about, that's a good time to talk about it, would be when somebody's falling asleep in a meeting or falling asleep at their desk. I had a trainee clinical psychologist that did that, and it was really, really important. We worked through his sleep for him. He didn't even know he was doing it. He then thought it'd be good if he set his alarm clock so that he had a 10-minute sleep, but at his desk. So it was times that are useful to somebody, and how to do it is really, really important. To have that conversation separately to help somebody work out some solutions that work for the team as well as for them is essential to make the best effect. So yeah, noticing when somebody's tired is really, really important. Noticing when somebody's talking about it more, noticing that somebody's drinking huge amounts of coffee and it's at the end of the day, and you're thinking, wow, why is that happening? Or eating lots of sugary things. I mean, offices don't help that anyway. So I'd love to see more offices having healthier food in those vending machines and just in the fruit bowl rather than a biscuit bowl would make such a big difference. But some of those other things that we don't always think about connected to sleep, if they're making more mistakes, you know, if there are poor communications and they're sounding irritable and it's not their normal way of being, it may be a sleep problem. The other thing then to do is to have that conversation and not to automatically assume it's about insomnia. Somebody's not sleeping because their head won't stop thinking. It could be one of, I would say, four problems. And again, I like to make it simple. I like the number four and the number three. And the four problems are, and the biggest one, and the biggest one with the health implications, is not breathing well at night. So what I spoke about before, sleep apnea. So asking the person what the problem is about their sleep, why they aren't sleeping well, is the most important thing. Because if you've got sleep apnea, you can go to your GP, you can go to a sleep clinic. They will offer you support and advice. You can get advice online. Because it's about breathing at night, you can get better at breathing. And I always say that it's important we breathe through our nose and not through our mouth. We've evolutionarily, again, been created to breathe through our nose and not through our mouth. We should breathe through our mouth as much as we eat through our nose, is one of the funny sayings I like. But doing that is really hard. And we do that less after we've been through some stressful times. It's easier to breathe through your mouth, and then our bodies get used to doing it. But our noses have got huge structures in there that help get rid of, filter out toxins and help us breathe better. And therefore sleep apnea is less when we can breathe through our nose. So if you can work out your sleep apnea and send them off to the GP, that's great. Sleeping too little could be for lots of different reasons. If it is insomnia, again, you can point them in the direction of the GP and get them to take part in an online cognitive behavior therapy program for insomnia. Mm-hmm. I think all NHS trusts in England have a program. Most of them have a program called Sleepio, but it could be another one, and they are all really good. But remember, if it doesn't work, that doesn't mean you're a hopeless case. There are other ways of helping and intervening. It doesn't work for everybody. And then it might be that you're sleeping too much, and you might again need to ask your doctor to check out your iron levels, your folic acid, why is it that you're sleeping too much? Is it that you have got depression? So again, it's a segue into having that conversation. So yeah, there are lots of different things that a staff member can talk about when you're on your own. You know, you might notice at other times, but you'll need to find a time to talk about it that enables them to not just be given glib answers. And it is really hard. I think somebody falling asleep in the office is such a hard thing to talk about. It's like somebody having tissue outside their pants when they walk out of the loo. Do you know what I mean? Or tissue on their shoe. How do you start that conversation? It can be really hard, but how thankful are people when you start it?
And
when
I
you tell them.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think, you know, when we start that conversation along the lines of, you know, I'm worried about you. Are you, I just want to check that you're okay. And you're coming at it, you're making it very clear that you're coming at it from a care point of view rather than how dare you fall asleep in a meeting?
Yeah.
What did you miss? And, you know, implications for your performance. So I think my advice is always with anything, if you notice something that doesn't seem right, doesn't seem normal for a person, or doesn't seem something that would be normally acceptable or expected in a workplace situation, it's always good to check it out. But just to start by, from the premise of I care and I'm just worried, I've noticed X, Y, or Z, just wondering if you're okay. And when you do it like that, it almost there's no sense of takes away any sense of shame or anything particularly. You know, you've got to obviously do it one-to-one, you've got to do it in a with all the right kind of communication skills, but I think you start the conversation, and then if you don't know anything about, you know, some of the sleep problems that you've just outlined, it doesn't matter because you can problem solve it together. So the person might actually have a really good idea of what's going on, and maybe they're not prioritizing it, or they know what they're struggling with, but they don't know what help to get, in which case I guess your starting point would just be to go and speak to your GP. Or it could be something you just sit and problem solve together, and, you know, just have your mate. If someone says, I'm struggling with something, have you thought about this? Or I wonder what it'd be like if, and you just you don't have to have that expert relationship at work about something like sleep, but as long as you're having the conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And it isn't always an easy conversation to have. And some managers don't have the expertise to be able to have that conversation. But that is just said beautifully, Lisa, is it doesn't need that expertise. We're all humans. We all need to sleep. And to know that you can have a one-to-one conversation and therefore be able to talk about your own. So it can be a huge leveler as anything else, and enables people to talk about other things that are going on. You know, for one gentleman, he'd slept fantastically well, but he'd actually seen a horrible incident and he couldn't get it out of his head. And he didn't know who to tell. He thought it wasn't okay to talk about it. But actually his manager just noticing that he wasn't functioning well at work and having, like you said, that one-to-one time rather than doing it in front of everybody else, and really valuing that member of staff to want to know what is individually happening to him. Is that bit about talking is magic? You know, just offloading. You know, we are meant to talk to each other and to share advice and support. It can make a massive, massive difference to people.
So as we, and I'm just conscious of the time, if we begin to think about wrapping up, what I'd really love, Jill, is to hear from you any sort of top tips for that you haven't mentioned already, or just to redirect and go, these are the key things out of everything I've said, for individuals who might be struggling with their sleep in terms of routine, or perhaps wake up, so not having any problems that in terms of sort of medical health issues, but they're struggling with their sleep a little bit. And then I'd love just to finish with your top tips that you would love companies, having listened to this, to go away and think, right, I'm going to go and do this, this, and this. So what would be your top tips, first of all, for any individuals?
So for individuals, putting that thing I said, and we were talking about earlier on about having the phone at the other side of the room, is, I think, an essential. I think these phones have invaded our lives and have many, many benefits, but we haven't really began to think it through. Schools are beginning to do that. They're trying to do healthy things with computers. So I think the next generation will be better, but putting the phones at the other side of the room having it as an alarm clock is great, and it will mean you don't press the snooze button, which isn't great. So maybe one of the tips is don't use the snooze button, because actually you'll just wake up, if you give yourself a 9 minute snooze or a 2 minute snooze, feeling more fatigued. You might as well just get out of bed. And if your phone's at the other side of the room, you're going to be getting out of bed anyway to switch it off. So that sometimes is one of my most basic tips for anybody, really. And the more we do that, the more we're teaching our kids to do it as well, and our friends. You know, if we're out on weekends away, you know, and we talk about, where am I going to plug my phone in? I don't want the one that's right next to the bed, because actually in hotel rooms that plug's there, isn't it, right next to it. And it's the same for staff when they are workers. You know, I do work with people that travel a lot for work, whether it be athletes or salesmen or engineers, and they talk about hotels not being set up. So the first thing we do is we talk to the staff that organise their travel and ask them to book a room that's away from the lift and on a higher floor, because the higher floors are less used by families. So families make more noise, especially babies. But if you're further away from the lift, you'll hear less noise. So even some of those nice little practical things that can make a difference is important. If somebody is struggling from deep insomnia, find it hard to stay asleep, then the first thing is to do is to make sure that when you have moments when you can't sleep, rather than staying in bed, if you're really feeling yourself getting really frustrated, is to get out of bed and to do something relaxing. Because while you're frustrated and your cortisol and adrenaline's flowing, it's not going to be helpful. You need to take yourself out of bed so you're not associating bed with frustration. Sit somewhere else in a nice calm corner. So sometimes when I'm working with students, it might be a pillow on the floor with a nice blanket on the other side of the room. But for other people, they might be able to use another bedroom. And then after 20, and then the only time to use a timer is 20 minutes, and then go back to bed. So that would be my advice if I was to give any top tips to people that are struggling. But that other bit that I said, don't forget the sleep hygiene. Keep it going. Keep doing it. Just because you've got a problem doesn't mean you shouldn't do the basics,
And
I think
also
is
on
essential.
that, I know you have a tip around noticing yawning in the evening and noting then when to go to bed. Could you just
Oh, yeah, Lisa,
because it's a
that's a
good
good one, isn't
one.
it? Yeah, so I know we've already spoke about yawns, but what we do know is that a yawn is a sign that we're going through a dip in our energy level. And we know that bodies are in, on average, a 90-minute cycle of high energy and low energy. So at a yawn, you're at low energy. 45 minutes later, you'll be at high energy. So if, say, I yawn at 5:30, I'll then have another dip in my energy at 7 o'clock, and another one at 8:30. Sorry, my maths, I'm trying to think this through. You might have to write it down as you're doing it for yourself. But if you work out a dip, and that's when you decide to, what you want to do is to go to sleep when you're in a dip, not in a high energy mode. So maybe, you want to be in bed for 11 o'clock and going to sleep. Then actually, how long does it take you to prep to go to bed, to brush your teeth, to do all the other things before the start of the next day? Then factor that in so that when you get into bed, you're going for your dip that fits with that yawn that you had in the day. I recently did a post on yawning though, so it is contagious. So there is kind of like a warning sign. It is your natural yawn, not one you've picked up from somebody else, that you've got to measure it from. That's really, really important. But yeah, it's a great little handy hint, because it is hard. And then people start to be self-aware. So they then notice when they've got low energy and high energy. And some people are now using it, going, look, I don't mind doing my emails when I've got low energy, but I want to save my high energy for some other activities. So I love the fact it even adds into people's self-awareness.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's been so awesome. And have you got anything else you wanted to finish off with in terms of listening to for the managers and leaders listening to this to go, right? Actually, I'm going to go and do this, or this.
Yeah, I think we're going to share some resources, aren't we, that will follow along with this. So one of the main resources will be an acronym called Stop Bang. So that's the acronym that helps a manager work out whether they need to go to the GP because they've possibly got sleep apnea. It's a real simple acronym. I won't go through the details now. Google it, find it anywhere. You know, if a man's really struggling with sleep, because sleep apnea is the biggest health implicator. You know, it affects your respiratory, it affects your heart, it affects your weight, it leads to type 2 diabetes. You know, it is the one, more than insomnia, that's got the biggest health implications. So, yeah, if managers can have their eye out for that one more than anything, it'd be great.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. And we'll definitely put all the resources that you recommend in the show notes that people can check those out. Jill, there's been so much to cram in. Honestly, we could talk about sleep for hours and hours because there's so much. But I think today you've given a really good flavour of why we need to think about it more, the implications it has, what we can do as individuals, what we can do as employers. So I think people have got plenty to go away with and think about and process and take action. And then obviously, if people want more specific advice, then they can reach out to you directly and we'll put your contact details in the show notes. So thank you.
No, it's a pleasure. They can get hold of me really easily because it's just Sleep Better Doctor for the website and info app. So yeah, hopefully that makes it easy for people.
Yeah, fabulous. Thank you so much, Jill. Really grateful for your expertise and your time today.
Oh, nice one, Lisa. Thank you for inviting me.
What have you taken from the conversation today? Please do think about your intention to do something differently. And do give the podcast a thumbs up on Apple or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'd be incredibly grateful if you could leave a short review too, as it helps spread the word far and wide. I'd love you to join the club to be part of driving real change that improves practice and people's experience at work. You'll be the first to hear about relevant updates and free downloadable resources. Please do reach out to me directly to discuss the topics we've covered on this podcast or perhaps other challenges at work. And if we're not already acquainted on LinkedIn, please do connect. All the links you need are in the show notes. Thanks again and see you in a fortnight.